Wait, I'll tell Mike. Do you mind?
No, I don't care.
I just thought I would mention a little bit about Earl, who just passed him. But Dad sent him first to Preston to manage the lumber company.
Yeah,
then he decided he wanted to go back to school. So that's why Vaughn and Marie came up, and Earl stayed with them a while till Vaughn got on the ropes of it. So he said, Earl told me this, that he went to the University of Utah. He wasn't sure, because in high school he'd leaned to electricity, an electrical engineer or something. Mm-hmm. And he says, I sat there with my pen, and all of a sudden, I wrote medicine.
Hmm.
And he didn't very often tell things like that, because he's a little skeptic. But I just thought I would mention that then he enlisted in the Navy as a medic. Hmm. And when he got back to school, they gave him credit for that time. And then he wasn't in the war, but they went to Norfolk, Virginia, and worked back and forth from there in Europe, bringing back the wounded afterwards.
That's awesome shit.
And I might as well mention Em Lou also was in this same war. She was working in the hospital at Verdun, France, right behind the trenches lines. And she said we could hear the fight. And then they would change soldiers ever so many days, those that were still alive. And they would come and they would entertain them, and they'd have a phonograph there, and they'd dance with them. And you know, they had big cloggy boots, army men, on the trenches. Mm-hmm. And we danced around, and we had about 8 ladies to a whole gang of men. And they'd say, well, when we get out of this, we'll come see you in Chicago. And she says, she hoped they wouldn't remember.
No, but she was telling, she's up on the top floor, and they could hear the French soldiers come running into Paris. The Germans are coming, the Germans are coming, the Germans are coming. And she said, the other nurse now looked out, and they were Frenchmen, soldiers were running into Paris in all different ways. And they could see the German army a little ways behind them. Mm. And these Frenchmen ran every which way and tried to hide. All of a sudden, they heard the Star Spangled Banner, and the U.S. Army came in the other side of Paris, and they pushed the Germans back. The U.S. Army did. And then, you told about your marriage?
No, I haven't said anything. Well, every one of us has had a wonderful experience, and they're all been different. And so with mine, I married Glenn Knight Furness. They're no relation to our Knights, but they are, both families have been from England. On June 19th, 1928, and he worked at a grocery store at that time, and he'd been going to night school on the side. He took typing and bookkeeping, and then he asked Washington Market, which store isn't there now, if he could work in their bookkeeping department. So he worked there for quite a while. But, let's see, and then finally, it seemed like he got out of a job, one thing or another, and he thought he could get one on the railroad, so they sent him to Sparks, and when he got there, they'd picked out some of their own men. So he came back, and we didn't know what to do. He had just started, bought a furniture. Mm-hmm. And it just rented a place at 2045 Monroe. Hmm. And so then, of course, you know, we had rent, but rent wasn't high. It was $25.
Is that all?
And we had 5 rooms, a pantry. And of course, we had coal stoves to heat and to cook on. I was glad I'd had that experience knowing what to do it. And we had our first dinner where we invited my folks, and we invited his mother down. And I had roasted a chicken. And when it was about time, had everything ready, I went into the front room and said to Glenn, it's time now for you to cut the chicken. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was his first experience, but he knew what to do. But his mother jumped up and said, he doesn't know about that. And out they both went to the kitchen, so I stayed in the front room. So I don't know who won the argument, but anyway. He wanted to do it so badly. His first meal for company and our home. Well, anyway, as time went on, he worked for Van Dyke's store for a while, and that was a time when Mother had been quite ill, and I'd been with her for September, October, November, and it, oh yes, in December, and Earl had taught Father could take Mother maybe to California, could Dad handle it? And he said, well, maybe he could if he thought help. Then Earl finally decided to take Mother out to his place because he thought he could help her, Pink Meyer. And Dad had just asked me to do a lot of typing for him and to type Grandfather Gilbert Belknap's diary, or journal, as you want to call it. So one night, it was a Friday, Glenn came, and after we had gone to bed, he said, I have got to go to Heber City Monday morning. That's where Van Dyke's transferred me to take charge of a store there.
Now, Van Dyke's is a furniture store?
Grocery.
Grocery.
He had four grocery stores.
Ethan Van Dyke.
And he and his wife are very good friends of Bonnie and Marie all their lives. You and his kids, practically, till the time they died. And I'd known him was a very friendly, loving person. Well, anyway, so we said he had to go. So I stayed for about 2 weeks and did this typing for Father. But when they got there, Van Dyke told him that this fellow who was managing had embezzled, and they had found it out. So they just put the jump on him and got there and told him he's out of a job. And Glenn kind of hated to face, you know, he knew the fellow. Well, anyway, we were there until everything in the country went broke. It was that deep depression. And so that Van Dyke decided to end all these stores while he was making a little profit. And he promised Glenn if he had certain amount made, anything over that, he'd give him a percent. Well, Glenn kept track of the purchases and the money and all this stuff, but he never got it. But he felt like he earned it. So anyway, he came and told Glenn that this is it. This is the end. And it was in April, just a week before Glenn's birthday. And so...
Of 1931?
Yes.
Okay.
And see, my mother was already dead at that time. And anyway, we had $25 is what he paid him. We paid $15 to the garage because that's where we left our car, because Heber City's an awful cold place in winter. And Tommy got gas and stuff. And then we paid $10 to a fellow with a truck to take our stuff to Ogden. Now, they did move our furniture stuff down, but every time we went to Ogden, we'd fill our car with stuff we wanted. So by the time it was to leave, we had the truck full. Anyway, he went to all summer and didn't get a job. He walked the streets and stuff. And so finally, he went out and picked apricots, anything he could get. And when he got through, the woman at the place had some quite ripe ones. She said, I'll give you these and take them home to your mother, make jam out of it. He says, my mother, I'm married. She says, you're not old enough to be married. He says, I am, and we're expecting a baby. Anyway, that's the way it went. Like my Aunt Barbara said, Mother's sister-in-law, Jewel, I know, looks like she's capable, but you look too young to be married. And he thought he was a pretty big guy. But anyway, so the time went on, and in last of October, we lost our baby. And we still hadn't found a permanent job, but he did have one on Saturdays at Piggly Wiggly's, who had just come into Ogden. And so he bought a lovely roast. It would cost a lot, but it was about 6 inches across in diameter. And he brought it home, and he wanted me to fix it for him. So he went on to work someplace else, and he expected this dinner when he come back. Well, his mother went into the pantry, and out she came with this roast. And I said, Mother, I'll do it. You were to sit down with nothing doing. She wouldn't let go of it, and I couldn't fight with her. So she put it in the deep pot, like Mother had, and learned how to make a lovely brown gravy, you know, and roast. Well, anyway, she put it in the pot, she poured water in it, and I said, that's too much water, better pass it. But she didn't, and she'd come after a while and cook and pour some more. Well, when she got through with it, it was absolutely gray.
Oh.
One of the whole roast.
Oh, the whole roast. Oh. And so Glenn came home and I put it on the table. He looked at it and he looked at me and he was looking for brown gravy and potatoes and stuff. Well, that's the last time we had meat at her hospital.